This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Good evening, Pete Dillon.
Oh, good evening. You just got me playing with my lozenge, and I don't want that to be apropos of anything and not to be taken the wrong way.
Right, because you've got a little bit of
a head cold. Yeah, a bit of a crappy throat, so I'm trying to soothe the throat and clear the nose.
Oh, is that just a product endorsement for a particular lozenge,
no,
maybe?
No, because I didn't say the name, so just the tagline. So, yeah, I've still got a bit of a cold. It's been a week almost.
Oh, do you think maybe you're dying?
Oh, no, you'd know if I'm dying, Dale. Oh, I'd have been lying on the bed screaming for soup and preparing my last rites and all of that. It's simply a head cold.
Right.
Which has been a little bit, well, not vicious, but it's a bucket of budge.
They're a bit hard to function with, aren't they? It's sort of, it's that sort of weather, really.
Well, I've gotten past the wet bit, so now it's just sort of a bit clogged and a bit raspy of throat.
Right.
Sounded a little like a drag queen, which at times is not a bad thing.
Well, I think it's probably always a bad thing, but, you know, good to hear you're still with us. We've got a bit of a show tonight.
We have. There's lots to get through. Going to have a bit of I hate to use a pun, but a bit of a shot at one of the Australian shooters.
I think we'd probably dress that up as a red hot go. we're going to be talking to trans journalist Kate Doak, who's based in New South Wales. There's some changes in the ACT that are coming, and she's going to walk us through those and what they mean. There's some workshop for mental health folk working with gay and lesbian people coming up with ACON.
Yes, which we like.
Interesting little commentary from Simon Copland, who writes for Fuse magazine, which is a gay and lesbian rag out of Canberra, having a bit of a go at the Greens and their elitist stance on marriage for gay people. Kind of strikes me as an oxymoron.
Yes.
More stuff on health.
To do with smoking.
Some stuff around the vaccine for
Gardasil.
Yeah, which is typically given to girls, but now they're going to give it to the boys. And look, lots of international news. Target is proving to be, you know, very much in our corner. And there's an 83-year-old lesbian lady called Edie.
I love this story.
She's gone to the Supreme Court. And I do want to talk about a non-gay item, but it does relate to us in some way, and it's the death of Sage Stallone.
Yes.
And some of the protesting that's come from our friends, the Westboro Church.
Our friends.
Kind of a big night tonight. So we should probably get on and I thought we'd play Boogie Shoes.
Oh, because you're in control of the music and
we're
going with a bit of a glee thing.
We are, but also this is by a trans performer and one of our news items tonight's, he's a transsexual, this performer, and one of our items tonight
is for this African-American boy.
Yeah,
from the Glee Project.
So let's play it.
Let's.
Time for the national news, please.
It is time for the national news. Let's start with Russell Mark. He's made a fairly, what I think is, ridiculously inflammatory comment.
Let's also preface that by saying he's part of the Olympic team and he's on the rifle team.
Yes, he's an Australian clay shooter, as is his wife. Her name is Lauren. He's come out sort of suggesting that he's been prevented from rooming with his wife at the Olympics in the Olympic Village. While gay couples will share beds. He actually refers to...
Because we're all whores.
Yeah, exactly. They were notified by Chef de Mission Nick Green, former Australian rower, that they would be prevented from rooming together. And they were basically told if they want to be together, they need to seek accommodation outside of the Olympic Village because it is standard practice in the Olympic Village. It's one of the very few rules that do exist that you just can't be in... You know, it's segregated.
It's one of the rules that actually works in the gay community's favour. So they're now saying that, they're saying that they've been discriminated against based on their sexuality. And I'm sorry, but that it's not even remotely the case, mate.
No.
You know, this segregated accommodation rule has been in place ad infinitum.
Yes,
do you know
absolutely.
What I mean? So he says that there's a double standing, saying the stupid part of this, which I've argued with them, is that there are tons of gay couples. There aren't tons of gay couples on the Olympic team. How many do you know of?
2008, the last Olympic Games, there were 11 gay... There are 11 out athletes from right across the world.
So that's tons.
No, that would be at most 5.5 couples. Now, none of those were couples. Some interesting quotes from Matt Mitchum in response to this that he's saying that he doesn't know of any, basically. Mm-hmm. But what I also find interesting in this, and obviously Russell and Lauren are just a little miffed. He had a go a little while ago about the use of sleeping pills.
What was his position on that?
That they should be used. The AOC have banned those.
Particularly Stilnox, in the light of everything that we know medically, and then, you know, cases of, you know, the Grant Hacketts of the world going bonkers on them.
So Russell actually came out and sort of against the AOC on that, and then released today are pictures of his wife in a green and gold bikini, shotgun sort of tossed over the shoulder. On the front cover of Zoo magazine, which, again, the AOC, not entirely happy with that either.
Doesn't really fall in line with the code of conduct. If you think about all the selfies that Stephanie Rice has loaded over the years, and
correct,
she's been absolutely bollocked for that.
And also those two young boys who went into a gun shop in the United States and had a photo of them
absolutely
taken with guns. They were pilloried for it. So,
well, she's going to take the position that this is simply reflecting the sport and her craft of her sport.
Mm.
My question is, shooting, is it really a sport? I don't think that. I think so. You know, it's right up there with netball. You know,
well, then,
I mean, chucking a ball around, shooting stuff. I mean, hello.
Yeah, you're not fond of cycling as a sport either, are you?
It's not a sport. It's something couriers do for a living.
So, yes, this
I'm going to cop it on Twitter tonight.
You are. This issue is, in fact, I think a very low-brow sort of go saying we're being discriminated against because we're heterosexual. What we say to Russell Mark is that is a pile of bollocks.
And I'm kind of offended, to be honest.
I'm
actually
as well.
Really offended that he thinks that this is heterophobia, and it isn't. This is simply the AOC communicating their position, their long-held position on segregated accommodation and its benefits. It's one of the few laws in the sporting world that works for the homos, and yet we don't see any, you know, we don't see any dens of iniquity in the Olympic Village, none that we know about.
No,
and
but
good
interestingly,
on them if there
the,
are.
The extraordinary amount of condoms that are used in the Olympic Village, they had to actually bring more in China because the amount they put into the village in China as compared to Athens in 2004, they put in a lot more condoms in China in 2008. They had to bring more in.
Well, you know why that is. It's because they don't have Facebook.
True.
They've got nothing else to do.
Oh, that's another contentious one that we might leave alone. So,
no,
yeah, look,
you know, Facebook's not allowed over there. So
no,
it's not being
one wonders
facetious.
What all of the Olympic team are going to do.
Dan, in London?
Yeah.
Oh,
well,
I think, you know, they'll have lots to do.
Yeah, I suppose so. Dan Kowalski also, who we know, a member of our sort of larger joy family, made some comments as he in his role in swimming, saying that you know, this is just what happens. You are segregated, so.
You sign on for that very early on.
Oh,
this
absolutely
wouldn't have been a surprise to them, Pete.
Well, it's not his first Olympics. It is, in fact, his fourth or fifth Olympic Games. I think his fourth. So he's well aware that this is the situation, married or not, that he's been in male-only accommodation for the last.
And why would the laws change for him?
Well, this is because he's carrying a gun.
He's gun tooting.
So, yeah, we're not very happy with Russell Mark, and I think I might already flag that there's a Donald nomination for him as we speak.
Well,
we'll get to that
at the head.
Later. Now, tell me, the ACONS Peace of Mind program, AIDS Council of New South Wales, has a new project.
Yeah, look, it's called Peace of Mind, and it's in response to distressing mental health statistic in our community. So gay and lesbian, bisexual and transgender Aussies are up to 14 times more likely to attempt suicide than people in the general community. Up to one-third experience major depressive episodes compared to just 7% of the general population, and we're also twice as likely to experience anxiety disorders. I think that's really compelling stats. So what they're doing is they're running a series of workshops with the Mental Health Coordinating Council, and it's all about establishing an understanding and support for people who are experiencing some problems with their mental health, who are also identifying within this community. So look, they're available to all community members, but they're for workshop practitioners to some degree and clinical practitioners, some community members. But if you're having mental health issues, this is not the workshop for you.
No. Okay, so this is geared more towards those people who are supporting you.
It is indeed. Yeah. So look, it's you know, we wish them well. We tried to get them on the phone, but they sadly were not available. But, you know, we are thinking about doing a mental health special at some stage.
Yeah,
we're going to bring them in. We'll bring them in for a chat. Changing gears, also talking about panic.
Yes.
Queensland priest Paul Kelly, he's led a successful online revolt against the gay panic defence. And he's relaunched the campaign urging resident redneck Premier Campbell Newman to drop the discriminatory law. I mean, as we know, Queensland is hurtling back to the 50s.
In the dark ages. It's ridiculous.
So, look, he lodged his campaign with change.org, mm-hmm. and it garnered some really strong media traction nationally.
Yep.
25,000 plus signatures, and Stephen Fry and fantasy writer Neil Gaiman, you know, they weighed in as well.
Mm.
So, you know,
we'd actually encourage people to log on to
change.org and continue to support this, because as the Queensland government continues to strip back all of our rights, I think we will see a reinstitution of this law that allows people to say, hey, I'm going to bash the bejesus out of you because I'm a bit worried you're gay and you might be cracking on.
Mm. And, you know, we know that the gay panic defence in the United States has been removed. It's been removed in every other civilised society. So it just seems to be extraordinary that Campbell Newman and Jared Blahy, again, you know, these two fellows seem intent on making life so incredibly difficult for Queenslanders. Of course, Paul Kelly, he first started this original campaign after a man was murdered in his churchyard in 2008 in Maribyrn, Queensland. So it's just extraordinary.
It is extraordinary. What's more extraordinary, Pete, is there seems to be a split within the Greens over the marriage equality issue. And apparently that split is ongoing and currently widening.
Yes.
So a prominent party official is claiming that Senator Sarah Hanson-Young, who's chatted with us on a number of occasions, that her insistence that marriages between two consenting adults discriminates against others in the gay community, including polyamorists.
Now, this is where this debate gets ridiculously murky. To my mind, and I think this is to most people's mind, polyamorism and anything that involves mutual partner, more than one partner, or more than two people in a relationship, is probably outside of the boundaries of this discussion. What we're asking the government to do is to remove or change the Marriage Amendment Bill of 2004, which states that marriage is between one man and one woman, to just take the man and woman part out of that, so that
it's
marriage is between two people. Absolutely. Mm. Yeah. That's the amendment that we would like to see, or the change to that 2004 bill. When you start talking about polyamorism, you're starting to look at outside Christianity and potentially looking at religions like Islam, one of the three major religions where multiple wives are not only allowed but encouraged. In some sectors of the Muslim faith. So
within the heterosexual Muslim faith,
I imagine. Yes, correct. So
I kind of wonder what the utility of this sort of editorial is, because Copland is describing the approach as elitist, to catering to well-off and presentable homosexual and lesbian couples, and that the gays and green leaders are trying to hide the scary queers who may harm the rest of the movement. I think this gentleman is so off point.
Mm. But he's the convener of the Greens and the ACT. One wonders how he's got to that level when he sort of is suggesting that this is, you know, even feasible.
We tried to get him on the phone today. He's currently overseas and unavailable for comment.
Of course.
But he's saying that he doesn't support any other changes to the Act.
Mm.
Well, she doesn't. Sorry.
Senator Young. He's
reflecting Sarah's position that she's not saying that there should be any other changes. And, you know, and she's right. I mean, I think that the minute we open it up to niche communities within the marriage equality struggle, let's get marriage equality over the line
and then
look for the other supplementary
rights.
And
what concerns me is this provides fodder to those opposed.
Absolutely. It just proves their point that we're all going to start sleeping with our children
and
take multiple wives.
And we'll be having, you know, menage to our marriages, as the opposition have said already. It sets the Greens up to be extremists. So I think it actually puts a whole bunch of fuel onto, unnecessarily onto a fire.
Yeah.
Perhaps we should have some messages back and have a look at the rest of our news.
And let's chat with Kate.
Yeah.
Hello, this is Alison Moyer. You're listening to Joy 94.9.
Yes, you are. I actually feel like I sound a bit like Alison.
Really?
You know, delusions of grandeur again.
Maybe. We've got a little bit of a delay getting Kate on the line. She's in transit right now, so we're going to play a song. And
yes.
It's another song from Glee. It's by the lovely Irish lad. It's called Home.
Oh, he's gorgeous.
Another summer day has come and gone away, and Paris are all.
Oh, that was gorgeous. That's Home from Glee.
Are you loving my music selections tonight?
I actually am.
Because normally we row about it.
Oh, no, we don't row. We do have a discussion.
We do express some issues relating choices.
Well, occasionally you tell me mine are just crap and
well,
we deal
are,
with
it. Well, they just sound like very sad Christians. I think we're sort of looking at it coming up to sort of, I don't know, what time
is
it?
It's about 20 past 11
okay,
or thereabouts.
Cool. You're listening to Salt and Pepper on Joy 94.9. By the way, this is Serena and Pete. And on the line we've got Kate Doak, who is a journo out of New South Wales, and
yes.
She's also a transgender girl. We just thought we wanted to talk through this news item that we've got coming out of the ACT. Good evening, Kate. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. How are both of you going?
Good,
oh, we're good.
Good.
Thanks for joining us. We do appreciate it. So, look, we just want to run through the recent report, which is called Beyond the Binary, Legal Recognition of Sex and Gender Diversity, which is coming out of the ACT, the Law Reform Advisory Council. And the report's calling for the abolition of the requirement for a person to undergo sexual reassignment surgery before being able to change the record of their sex, as well as a recommendation for an intersex option to be included along with male and female categories when registering a person's birth. I haven't actually read the report, but I had some contact with you earlier today and you indicated that you were ploughing through it. Why don't you walk us through what you reckon?
Okay, and pretty much what the report is that it's a review of all the various legislation and also policies that the ACT government has in regards to same-sex and gender-diverse people. And as you've said, one of the main areas they've focused on has been the transgender community and also the intersex community. Now, with that, they've gone through and gone, right, we need to focus on different things in regards to the office of births, marriages and deaths as well.
Matches and dispatches.
Yeah, in order to pretty much figure out like what can be done in order to make it so that people can get the right birth certificates for their gender identity, and also what can be done to make things easier for them in regards to getting jobs, in regards to getting passports or any other form of identification that they may need. And for a lot of gender diverse people from around the entire country, that isn't as simple as what it may sound, because there's so many different pieces of documentation that you've got to have in order to prove not only who you are, but what your qualifications are, and a lot of that relies on gender.
Mm. Look, there's been some applauding of this of this report, there's also been some criticism, in particular from OII Australia, which is the organisation, which is an intersex advocacy organisation, who are suggesting that having a third gender or the X on some of these birth and identity documents is not necessary and would in fact create that third that almost discriminatory thing by being that X, by being that third gender.
Well, in that
gender.
It identifies people, so therefore holds them up for discrimination.
Yeah,
is that what
absolutely,
you mean?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
What do you reckon about that, Kate?
Well, I think it all depends on a person's personal situation in regards to that, because I know of a number of people who have gone, well, I don't really fit the binary, so I don't feel comfortable identifying as either male or female. So for people who are in that particular situation, having the X option, similar to what they do with the Australian passports, for example, that's actually a suitable option for them and something that they can feel comfortable with. But again, at the same time, other people go, well, I don't really feel comfortable being identified solely as an X or as other, for example. So, again, it depends much on a person's individual situation.
But if we're to look at parents making decision on the birth of a child, where that child is in fact determined to be gender dysmorphic, whether it's an intersex or what have you, there's services that people need to access in that child's growth before that child can actually start making these decisions for themselves in their, you know, perhaps mid to late teens, for things like education and that sort of stuff. Is that not a situation where that X is again going to set that child up for discrimination?
Well, again, I think it depends on the person's own personal situation, because take, for example, one of the documentaries that was broadcast over there in the UK a couple of years ago, for example. There was a young girl who had been determined to be male by the doctors at birth, but in fact, like, she was actually female. She had pretty extensive, like, intersex
bits
condition and all of that. So it wasn't until, like, a few years later that she just went, right, I don't feel male. I've got to identify with who I am. And she then went, well, I want to make it so that I fully identify legally and everything as female. So at that particular point in time, she was about 5 years old, and there was so much work that had to go into just making it so that that one little box that had to be ticked could be ticked in the other direction, so that she could be identified as female.
Look, I think it's just, I think there's so many layers here. I think what Pete's talking about is the issue relating to discrimination. You know, is this policy going to create more of that? Well, yeah, you know, possibly, because this is a discrimination society. But, you know, I think, you know, I don't think it's a really, I don't see it as a linear process, these changes. I think that it's got so many layers of consultation that it needs to succeed in completing, because, you know, for one person checking the X box, for instance, you know, that may really work for them. But for others, it won't. I think it speaks to some bigger issues within society that may crop up. And I'm all for it, by the way. My position is that you should be able to declare the agenda that you identify with on all of your legally binding documents. You know, I just think that's how it should be. I guess the bigger issue for us is that we're worried around the implications of discrimination for this community.
Well, again, with that, I can only answer this from a personal perspective and from what I've seen of various other instances worldwide where the X option has come up. Like, I think that we've got to view all of this with an open mind, because if, like, we say, well, we're only going to have the two different options, you're either male or you're female in regards to this, it can put people in a position where they're being discriminated against, even though we're trying not to discriminate them. If you get where
this thing is not the solution to bigotry.
Oh, okay, absolutely,
that's a separate issue. I think that the gay and lesbian community is campaigning for marriage equality. I see this as another equality issue.
Absolutely.
Take the marriage out of it, and we've got just another equal rights campaign. Mm. I think the bigger issue relating to bigotry is the one that it just speaks to naturally.
Mm. Symbolically, as it's been suggested, this is a very significant report, and I think it's fantastic that the research has, the research has been done. The attempt has been made to remove some discrimination from what are probably one of the most marginalised groups, not just in the ACT, but nationally. I would suggest that discrimination that we see for GLBT people is probably worse for those that are trans and intersex. And I'm just taking that as an assumption from what I've witnessed. Go on.
Speaking of national, this particular report is also going to have national implications as well, because if you look throughout the entire report, there's also references to the various other states around Australia in regards to LGBTI rights, mm-hmm. as well as also employment legislation as well, in regards to equal opportunity, in regards to sex discrimination, in regards to human rights. And another interesting thing to look at in regards to this particular report is it also analyzes the impact of various human rights and also discrimination laws that the Australian Capital Territory has had for pretty close to about 20 years now. So it reviews basically what has worked, what isn't working, and also what has worked but needs to be improved on as well.
Okay.
Very, very quickly, Kate, there were some changes in September last year around passports, for example, that were announced by the federal government. Where does this sit in that sort of that broader scheme of things as far as what's happening at a federal level and then what's happening in both territory and or state levels?
Well, I think that we're seeing an incremental process at the moment where we're slowly getting some rights for the LGBTI community in some areas, particularly in regards to employment, but others, like, they're just taking a little bit longer than what we'd prefer to see them happen. Mm. With with the passports issue that you just raised, that was a pretty massive victory for a lot of LGBTIQ people. And I actually wrote about this particular story back when it first broke. And there was quite a lot of work that went into that particular campaign. And I think it showed in many ways, like, how committed different parts of the government are towards achieving equality for LGBTIQ people. However, at the same time, it also showed some of the weaknesses that a lot of the advocates have had, like over the past few years, in regards to being willing to work together, not only like with other advocates, but also with the government itself. Because with the passports issue, that was done strictly like with the federal government. There was no real outside consultation that was brought in, except for like a handful of groups such as Agenda, WA Gender Project, and a number of different groups like that. So you didn't have any of the competing groups such as like the Salvation Army, for example, or the Australian Christian Lobby coming in saying, oh, this isn't correct, this isn't right, this is destroying our own rights. So it basically just made things a whole lot easier than, let's say, for example, what the marriage equality debate has been like.
Look, Kate, I think, you know, you've really helped position our understanding of this issue, and we're keen to come back to you and chat with it as it continues to evolve. Look, you're a journalist, and obviously you focus on a lot of trans reporting. How can people find you on Twitter?
You can find me on Twitter under the call sign Kate Doak, which is K-A-T-E-D-O-A-K, and I'm more than happy to answer any questions that either you guys or your audience may have in regards to this in the future.
All right. Terrific. Well, thank you so much, lady, for joining us tonight. We've really enjoyed chatting with you, and we wish you a very good evening.
Good evening to you.
Thanks, Kate.
Take care, Kate. What a nice chick. I quite like her.
It's an interesting discussion, which has, like you say, certainly clarified a few things in my mind. I do apologise for that great big bang that happened in the middle of that.
Look,
I moved my
chair.
You
know, backflips in the studio whilst we're interviewing are not appropriate.
I'm practicing my rhythmic gymnastics.
Oh, you're
going to
get out your ribbons, love.
Yeah,
get
look
out your ribbons.
A couple of quick stories I just wanted to touch on before we go. Yeah. One's around the National Tobacco Strategy, which has been released for 2012 to 2018, seems to overlook the LGBT community. And it's interesting that 34% of GLBT people are smokers compared to 17% in the general community. And it's saying that we are more likely to smoke, and yet we've been completely ignored in this.
Yeah, but so, is the health message any different?
Absolutely not. That was going to be my question. Why do we need to specifically address LGBT people in this report? It's about reducing smoking across the board.
It's about morbidity and mortality. Every individual is responsible for that if they choose to smoke.
That's exactly
right. If you're
right.
Gay or lesbian, I don't think that smoking as a gay makes you any more likely to get cancer. Gay cancer. You get gay cancer.
Yeah, it's a bit of a concern. And also, I just wanted to, again, while we're on health, LGBT organisations have welcomed federal government decision to extend the free Gardasil vaccination, which is currently available for teenage girls for the reduction of, or potential reduction of cervical cancer, to boys, which I read something the other day, which this is a boon for men who particularly may be at risk of sexually transmitted infections and diseases, that the Gardasil will actually work as a preventative measure in some of those
because
regards.
There are very high rates of anal cancer amongst gay men, particularly within the HIV-positive gay men population. So gay men are 20 times more likely to develop anal cancer than heterosexual men, possibly because of, you know, the modus operandi. So this is a really good move, I think.
I think it's fantastic.
It just allows people to have a couple of more things in place that helps check their health and some prevention. I think it's great. And, you know, we had to get rubella and TB and all sorts of
remember those injections.
Bloody awful
painful
jabs.
Well, we might have a few messages, and I think we might come back and now Noni's not with us tonight.
She's not. She's shooting a new TV series up in Sydney, so she's away for the next 2 weeks.
Yes, a bit of
so
a late
we thought we'd
scratching.
Play we'd play an old segment that we kind of thought was a bit of fun.
Yeah.
Hello, this is Noni Hazelhurst. You're listening to Salt and Pepper on Joy 94.9. Aren't you lucky?
We're back,
and we've got the lovely Noni Hazelhurst with us again this week.
I'm sparkling.
Sparkling.
You are sparkling. Hey, we wanted to talk about friends this week. Fair weather friends.
Got any?
You know who.
The odd one or two.
I've got a couple.
I'm a bit of a one myself.
Are you?
Well, I think it's it goes with the territory of being a freelance performer.
Because you're a bit transient.
Very transient, very gypsy-like existence. But also when you're working with people, you have a very close, intense relationship and love each other to death and often end up marrying someone. But that's been my experience anyway. But then you never see them again. So it's really quite an odd thing. But also, you know, you might go off for 6 months to do a tour, or you'd be ensconced in some series and you're working from 6 a.m. in the morning till 7 o'clock at night.
And so you're knackered.
You don't pursue people who have a more normal life in the way that
And would you
do.
Would you cross more of those personal lines in those really intense periods of time where you're on location with someone? And then, you know, sometimes is it like you run out of things to say at the end, and then that's just the portion of the friendship has been.
The weird thing is that you become so close, you become like a family. It does become your family because often you're playing the role of people in a family. Mm. So you do have to
have to take on all of those elements
and that bond. And you're on your best behaviour. So they don't really see who you are. They just see, you know, that version of yourself that you're presenting. But then often when you meet them later, you've got nothing to talk about because that particular intimacy has gone.
Yeah,
it's completely
absolutely.
Gone.
It's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's
but
a
does
weird
that
existence.
Really make you a fair weather friend? I don't think it does.
I think my friends think it does.
Well, the reason I ask is because, you know, there's been some transition in my life over the last couple of years. And I was reminded that I've become so obsessed by what I'm doing that at times I let my friendships
lapse.
Not slide, but they'd lapse, and it's not a good way to be. And I've been reminded of that in a very personal way, and you know that's all on the mend. But I wonder if you are a fair weather friend because you're obsessed by something else. It's sort of like when we get into a new relationship. Do we become, you know, when you're in that first sort of month or two where all you want to do is stay at home and screw.
Look into each other's eyes.
Yes.
Whisper sweet nothings.
Yeah, all
while
of
the
that.
Limerence is happening.
It's just lots of shagging.
And your friends sort of see a tweet every now and then that, you know, all's well and you haven't
I don't
died.
Know that that's a good example, really.
No, but mentioning tweets, I think a lot of us spend a lot of time now in isolation checking out the tweets, checking out the
you see,
Facebook.
I couldn't agree more. That just worries me so much.
That can be an hour or two a day.
I mean, I do have a friend
you could be talking to friends.
That the relationship with her as a mate, as a really long-term friend, this person came to visit me and spent the entire time tweeting. And I just thought,
gee, how interesting are
I'm
you?
Just so bored by this.
Yeah, clearly
I was boring.
Yeah.
But the dominance of that particular social media thing in her life is at the expense of anybody who's not really – I mean, I tweet a lot, but I don't tweet in company. I don't believe in being on the phone in company.
No.
Well, it's like when you go to see somebody and or, you know, somebody's gone out of their way to come and pick you up from somewhere – and they spend their entire time conversing on the telephone.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's rude. If somebody has come out of their way to come and get me at the airport, then I'm going to tell them, even if I chew their ears off, that I've been away for 3 days and I bore them to death by the time they get me home, they'll be happy to drop me off. I think that's important rather than, you know, being fetched at the airport and just hang on, I've got to ring this person. Or I'm on Facebook to let everybody know I'm checking in at the airport.
But it's partly city living too. I don't think this is such an issue if you're in the country because you have a more stable set of people around you.
Mm.
So is social media replacing our need for intimacy and friendships? Intimacy in friendships. I don't mean intimacy
in
the sexy
sex. I don't think it's replacing our need for it, but I think it's
replacing
it.
Intimacy.
Mm. Of
and that worries me.
It can only be 120 characters or whatever, so you're not going to go 40, sorry.
She doesn't tweet, isn't that obvious?
I don't do it. I have enough that I have to keep looking at without, I can't, and I don't think my opinion's terribly interesting. But I just feel that city life, it makes it difficult as well because it's not easy to get around. It's not easy to go and hop in your car and go and visit somebody to find a park. You know, it's a three-act play to go out. So,
whereas you're saying if you're in the bush, you can jump on the tractor and be through the paddock and in the next.
People are more accessible and they have more predictable hours.
Their lives are a bit more linear.
That's right.
I mean, Melbourne town is a fast-paced town in many ways. I mean, I'm from Perth, and that was certainly a gear shift for me. I don't want things like social media to, you know, replace friendships. For me, it's really important that time is, you know, it's in the real time.
But you also have set yourself a good boundary by having the electronic sundown, which I've actually started enacting in my life. And it's, you know, I'll get to 7 o'clock and it's like,
Everything goes off.
I'm offline.
I mean, I'll keep the landline open at home, but that's only because I've got elderly parents in another state, so that's always on.
I just flick the mobile to silent.
Mobile goes on silent, laptop's off, Facebook's off, Twitter's off, unless there's something that I'm following as a news item for Salt and Pepper. Mm. But I don't engage because I just feel like I'm one of these people that could quite easily lose my social skills.
Yeah, friendships are like any relationship.
You need to maintain them.
Whether it's with your kids
them.
Or your parents or any boy, your partner, you've got to work at them. And you know, maybe we need, you know, how they encourage couples to have date nights and things like that to kind of keep things alive. Maybe you need to just regularly have a progressive dinner or something.
My sister's a perfect example. She does not interact via social media at all.
Mm-hmm.
She has an email account. Her philosophy on this, and she's got five kids and they're all Gen Y's and they've all tried to sign her up and she's like, I don't want any part of it. I'm not interested. And we're like, but you know, you can keep in touch with your friends. And she said, I keep in touch with my friends. I go home from work. I sit on the couch and I pick up the telephone and I ring them or I go and visit them. And if I want to know what's going on in my family anywhere, because it's quite, you know, geographically well spread and quite large, I just ring Anne and say, haven't heard from Rosemary. Is she all right? Oh, no, she's had a hip replacement. Or whatever that may be. So,
well, and also if you're only getting messages that are written, you're missing all those nuances of vocal tones, facial expressions,
and it's just a word on a page.
Yeah.
Like quite often, Pete's texted me a couple of times early in the morning when I've just rolled out of bed. One word replies. You know what I mean? And that just means I've just woken up.
Well, and how do you know if someone's being sarcastic?
But I ring her and say, "Are you all right?"
I'm just waking up.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? For me, I always say, you know, I would never do conflict via text or email because for me, it's about ringing them up and going, this is ridiculous. We've had four text messages. Let's talk about this rather than putting it in.
Mm.
Unless, of course, you can't get people to take your calls. It's a completely different idea.
No, but that is a live interaction, whereas even though email is instantaneous, it's still not live.
Mm. And you can't put emotion into an email. You can't put emotion into a text message. You can't put emotion
into a
tweet.
Because, you know, emotion for me when I'm in the moment, whether it's a good moment or a bad moment, it's about the recognition of that person's experience of what you're saying. It's your own experience of what you're saying. And you can't play that through a tweet. And why would you in front of the whole world?
Mm. Unless you're direct messaging, which sort of brings us to a conclusion here. We started talking about fair weather friends and ended up realising that so much of what we do is driven by the electronic media.
Well, and we're all in danger of being fair weather friends.
Indeed.
We are. It's the bottom line, isn't it?
If we ignore them at our peril.
Friends
are good.
Will you be my friend?
I'll be your friend, lovey.
I'll be your friend.
Thank you.
We'll all be friends.
Right.
Yeah.
You can sit around a fire singing Kumbaya.
Oh, you're just blown it.
Thank you, as always, Noni Hazelhurst.
Thanks, Noni.
No worries.
Cuties is a social group for Asian women.
They're partners and friends who don't identify as straight. Yellow Kitties hold monthly meetings and social activities, all of which involve friends, food and lots of fun.
See yellowkitties.org for more details.
Ever wanted to learn how to make radio? Joy 94.9's Taste of Radio training course will teach you all about on-air presentation, interviewing, studio operation, media law, digital editing and more. Classes run regularly throughout the year, one evening a week, 6:30 to 9:30 for 8 weeks. Applications for our September courses are now open. Hurry, you must get your application and payment forms completed and returned to courses at joy.org.au before the 17th of August. If you'd like to learn all about Joy 94.9's Taste of Radio training course, head to joy.org.au, click on the Get Involved tab and select Taste of Radio. Visit joy.org.au. National news. Oh, no, international. You weren't holding your head things.
I'm actually trying to get rid of that little tick that I have by holding my my hands on my headphone.
Why?
Oh, I don't know.
I think it's a gay little affectation that I don't mind. It's one of your ones that I don't mind.
Right, well, I have to make sure that I remember that every week. Hey, let's start with Target selling gay marriage greeting cards for couples. Target's got a bit of a checkered history with the GLBT community, particularly in the US.
Well, that rap singer who came out last week.
Frank Ocean.
They're refusing to sell his CD.
I actually read this and looked at another story, and that's actually a bit of a beat up because
I think it is because it was released on iTunes first, and they couldn't get the traction sales wise.
Well, they had a 1 week exclusive sale on iTunes of Frank Ocean's new CD, so there was no way that Target or, in fact, any other chain store
they
across
were right
the
to hold
States,
off. I think Target are the good guys here. They're great with the National Breast Cancer Campaign.
Mm-hmm.
They're picking up more and more traction with the gay and lesbian history
yes.
history community.
Mm-hmm.
Despite their history.
Yes. Well, these greeting cards are now selling, which are made by Carlton Cards, which is a unit of American Greetings, hit the store shelves in June, and feature phrases like Mr. and Mr. and two very special women, one very special love.
Would you actually put that for heteros?
Maybe.
Mm.
I don't know.
Don't know, just putting it out there. Because I know that when I first came out, my dad would say, have you got a special friend?
Oh, really?
Yeah, because
not a lover or partner.
Well, he didn't
girlfriend.
Know the language. He's a, you know, he's an Irishman. You know, he's born and raised, and he didn't know the language, but he certainly does now.
Yes. Now, Target's has been selling t-shirts online, particularly in Minneapolis, in Minnesota, selling t-shirts online for Gay Pride Month in the United States. Not selling them in stores. So that's another little thing that they're concerned about. But they've also donated a portion of the proceeds from the shirts to the Family Equality Council, which is an advocacy group for LGBT folk.
However, in 2011, Lady Gaga ended a deal with Target for an exclusive edition, special edition of Born This Way, after it was revealed that the brand had donated $150,000 to MN Forward, a group that was backing Tom Emmer's gubernatorial bid in Minnesota, and he was known for being especially conservative and not supporting the rights for the gay and lesbian folk. So, you know, I think this is interesting. You know, Target should be allowed to redeem themselves. I think they're doing something that a lot of the other department stores aren't doing.
Yep. Look, going back to that thing, that the Lady Gaga thing, they've donated $150,000 to a group. That group is then backing somebody else. It's sort of, there's a convoluted way of getting to that, I think. And if they were giving the money straight to Emma and saying, here, we want you to win, here's 150 grand, then I can understand there being a bit of, you know, I don't like this sort of stuff. But when it's going sort of...
Yeah, I don't agree with that. I think your donation dollar, I mean, the interview with the Salvos is case in point.
Mm.
You need to make sure that your donation dollar goes to the right people. And when you're giving 150 grand, you're going to do your research before you do it.
Yeah, true.
So you're going to know where it ends
up. I suppose
it's
like buying coffee at Gloria Jean's, isn't it?
You know, we don't do that. I don't even let my dog drink the water from the pail at Gloria Jean's when we walk past it. Lola knows to not stop.
She might catch something.
She might catch some. She might catch hemophilia.
Hey, let's talk about Edie Windsor, because I really do like this story. She and her partner, her partner passed away and left her estate. And because they were in a same-sex relationship, she was forced to pay more than $363,000 in estate tax on her partner's estate. So this 83-year-old lesbian has said, no, bugger you, and has taken this to the Supreme Court.
Hang on, was she charged that amount because her relationship wasn't recognised?
Yes. Well, they were married in Canada, and whilst New York, the state, recognised their marriage, the federal government didn't, and this is a federal tax. So when she was left the, what I believe was quite a sizable estate, she was charged for more than 360 grand
because
in estate tax.
If she'd been married to a man, she wouldn't have had to pay those
correct,
estate taxes.
Correct, because that's exactly right. As the recipient of the estate.
That's the basis of her suit, she lodged on June the 6th.
Now, she's asked for this to be expedited or to be made quicker because she's bypassing the Second Circuit Court of Appeals. Because, well, her lawyer, her attorney has put forward that her age is against her. She's 83.
And she's got a heart condition.
Yeah. So we're really wishing this woman a whole bunch of success in not having to pay this 360 grand. And we will keep an eye on this story to see how it goes.
Look, I dragged this article off HuffPost Gay. Mm. So I might drop them a little line and see whether or not we can get in touch with Edie.
That would be wonderful.
Wouldn't it be lovely to have that old girl on the phone?
It would be gorgeous.
Less gorgeous is Lieutenant Governor Jennifer Carroll.
Yep.
So she's on the defensive saying, refuting claims from a former staff member, Carletha Cole, who claimed that she caught Carroll and her travel aide in a compromising position. Now, you know, I think everybody has a right to privacy. If you're going to get it on, then you should be able to do that quietly, particularly if you're in the public eye.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Carroll has come back saying, black women that look like me don't engage in relationships like that.
Now, this has already hit social media. I saw something this afternoon which had a picture of said woman with that quote, and then underneath somebody saying something about Tracy Chapman and I think Queen Latifah. Obviously, they're prettier. than this one. And look, she's, you know, she's a reasonably attractive woman, so what? I don't understand. You know, she's been married for 29 years and her accuser has been the one that has been single for a long time. I mean, all
so
of this.
So she doesn't want to be outed, but she's happy to out someone else?
Yeah, that really, really slack. So, yeah, it's a bit disturbing. Now, regardless of whether she is or is not, I don't particularly give a tinker's cuss. What concerns me is that she's suggesting that she's too pretty to be a
gay
lesbian.
I find that really appalling.
Well, I'd like to give her a kick in the teeth and make her a bit less pretty.
Well, I think she's actually not pretty because I think, you know, ugly goes right to the bone.
Yeah, it does. It does. Indeed.
Anyway, good news out of Washington. The Food and Drug Administration on Monday just passed has approved the first drug shown to reduce the risk of HIV infection. So 30 years battling the virus that has caused AIDS.
Mm-hmm.
So it's approved Gilead Sciences pill Truvada as a preventative measure for healthy people who are at high risk of acquiring HIV through sexual activity, such as those having sex with infected partners. I mean, mm-hmm. Hello. The decision comes less than 2 weeks after the agency approved another landmark product, the first over-the-counter HIV test that Americans can use within the privacy of their own homes.
What I like about these two things from the FDA, the first is that you can, in some senses, determine your diagnosis in your home without having to go through a medical practitioner. And the second is that you then can, in some respects, use this medication.
Mm.
So for me, this says a lot about the privacy of an individual, regardless of sexuality, that they can manage these things themselves without having to sort of go through what, for many men and women, is a very traumatic experience of sort of running up to a doctor for a test and then being told you are HIV positive.
Well, I think what's really interesting is that since HIV has been sort of in the media and it's been a really long time now, there's a steady 50,000 new infections in the US every year over the past 15 years.
That's 750,000 people.
750,000 people. Mm. So roughly 1.2 Americans have HIV.
Yep.
And it's estimated about 250,000 are unaware currently that they're infected.
Which is the bigger concern.
I just, you know, the message isn't getting out there.
Mm. Interestingly, and whilst it's not in this particular article, that increase in those people that aren't aware are predominantly heterosexual, who are either engaging in not just unsafe sexual practices, but exchanging of needles and all sorts of things that do obviously transfer the virus.
What's really interesting is that there are some precautions around taking this. If you've already got HIV, it's recommended that you don't take it because it will actually develop a resistance. And there are some kidney and liver functions. You always see that in some trial drugs.
Yep.
And people need to be aware that you need to be negative when you start taking it. And so whether or not it's something you start handing out to young gay lads. But I don't want to do that because I don't want them to stop using condoms.
Oh, absolutely. They've got to use all of those measures.
Well, the range of other STDs that they can prevent with condom usage is really good. Mm. I don't know. Let's keep an eye on it.
I think for people who are in relationships for a period of time and then determine or discover that one person in that relationship is HIV positive, I think this, for the negative partner, provides a bit of safekeeping.
Mm-hmm.
In that relationship.
Mm, okay. Look, Sage Stallone, son of Sylvester Stallone, the actor in Rocky, he was a 36-year-old actor and he appeared in a couple of the Rocky films as his son.
Mm-hmm.
Sadly, he died on the weekend of a drug overdose, a suspected drug overdose.
And they're saying an accidental, the last report I read.
And there is some query around it being Xanax-related, so it's another Xanax-related death, which is of great concern. So what really disturbs me is that the members of the Westboro Baptist Church have been called to picket his funeral on account of his adulterous father. So we know that the Westboro Church hates the gays, you know, God's hate fag, let's kill them all. Some of the tweets, Margie Phelps.
Who is the daughter of the founder, Fred Phelps.
She's got 5,500 followers. She said, thrice married rebel taught his son to mock God, picket funeral. So,
adulterous dad brought on wrath of God on son, blood on her hands, blood on dad's hands, picket funeral, woe. This is just, I don't know where these people find it within their Christian minds or hearts.
And listen to this. They say, tell Stallone to mourn for his sins, not pimp out son's dead body to proud sin. I mean, it's grammatically disturbing, but they draw such a long bow, Pete. This is the bit I don't get.
Well, these are the same people that are picketing the funerals of soldiers that come back from who are killed in action, because they see that this is the government's way of repaying. God's way of repaying the government for allowing, you know, equal marriage in some states.
I just don't get the logic of it. I really find it so tenuous.
There is no logic when these people are that extremist and that. And I don't know if you've seen, there was a documentary about them. They're all interbred. It's incredibly disturbing who these people are.
And they're terribly wealthy. They travel everywhere through the country on private jets.
Well, they're a cult, is basically what they are. So with giving them, I think, oxygen just gives them more reason to be. So,
in better news, we've got some news out of San Fran. After nearly two decades of separation, sparked by its inclusion of a gay pastor, a San Francisco congregation has finally rejoined the Lutheran Church. So on Sunday, the First United Lutheran Church voted to rejoin the church nearly 3 years after receiving an apology and an invitation to reunite.
And this is after a 17-year split between the congregation and the broader church after the congregation ordained and refused to abandon an openly gay pastor. They were suspended in 1990, formally expelled in 1995, another San Francisco congregation, St. Francis Lutheran Church, was also cut loose for its protection of two lesbian pastors in the same year. Thankfully, Lutheran Church has moved on a bit, and they now admit gay and lesbian pastors into the clergy. They've issued this apology and invited the others back, and three years later they've said, all right, we'll do it.
Good on them.
Yes.
Other good news coming out of Hungary is that the president of Hungary has just now signed the new criminal code on July the 13th, which includes references to sexual orientation and gender identity in its provisions of hate speech and hate crime, and does away with degrading terminology on same-sex sexual relations.
Yeah, look, the law comes into force July 1 next year, and they've basically rehashed a piece of legislation that was originally passed back in 1978. So, you know, 33 years later, they've finally sort of got there. There are some people saying that this is not enough because of some of the translations from Hungarian to English. It doesn't differentiate between different forms of sexual activity. It means the degrading terminology used in Hungarian criminal law for centuries to name sexual activities other than vaginal intercourse will no longer be in use. So, interestingly, the age of consent in Hungary will remain at 14 years, equally for same and different sex.
Interesting.
14.
That's very young, isn't it? Well, you know, legally, you can give informed consent at the age of 14. We're going to bounce through to the Donald.
We will.
Goodo. It's that time of the week, Pete Dillon. It's time to trawl through our nominations for who is our Donald, you know, prospective winner. We know that the Donald is our tool of the week, though. That person, place, or country, even.
Yes, or organisation.
Or organisation that has, in fact, offended our gay sensibilities.
Well, there are three. I did state very early on in the piece there was a national nomination for Russell Mark, the shooter. My other two nominations are Jennifer Carroll from Lieutenant Governor of Florida and the lovely folk at the Westboro Church.
Mm. The shooter. It goes to national this week.
Well, he flew out at 3 o'clock earlier today in the afternoon, so we'll have to wait till he gets back to present him with that.
Mm. Yeah, well done, mate. You are our tool of the week. You've not been discriminated against. You've just been a bit silly.
Yes. We will be back next week, of course. You can download the podcast of Salt and Pepper on the Joy website, joy.org.au. Until we return with our dulcet tones, Serena Ryan, good night.
Good night, dear sir. Let's get in the car and go. Matt, thanks for doing our buttons tonight, pressing all of our buttons. Sleep well, everyone. Good night.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.